Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the February 22nd City Council study session. I apologize for my voice. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold today. Excuse from our meeting today is Councilmember Glover, who is ill. Item one on our agenda is to review the agenda items for tonight's council meeting. We do have a couple of items off the consent, but let's make sure that everything else is going to remain the same. Council items three are various liquor license applications. Item four are various purchasing contracts. Five are resolutions. And six is taking action on a zoning case. And seven are introduction of some zoning ordinances. And eight is receiving public comments on another ordinance. We do have items off of the consent agenda today. That's item 6A, zoning case on 6400 block of East Test Drive. I'm sorry?
9A.
Oh, I'm sorry. 9A, excuse me. 9A is off the consent, as is 9B, which is related to 9A. So currently, that's the only item off the consent agenda. Does that sound good, Council? Okay. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the city's fiscal year 2016-17 home funding application for the Mesa Art Space Lofts project in the amount of $500,000. Liz, our housing director, it's good to have you here.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. I am here to discuss with you the funding application that was submitted to the City of Mesa for use of home funds. As you know, the home program allocates funds to provide gap funding to expand affordable housing. It has been very successful in strengthening public and private partnerships, and we are able to leverage significant federal funding into our city because of the home funds. The timeline that we have gone through with you, we started back in November, in which we brought before you our home application process to open it up and assign $500,000 for the home rental development program, which you approved. We opened up the process on November 30th, and as of December 21st was the first initial review date for the home applications. We received two applications at that time. We went before our housing and Community Development Advisory Board on January 7th, which they were able to listen to presentations and provide us scoring. We did a final funding direction today to give you the results of that evaluation and what we are recommending and asking for your direction. There is a March 1 deadline for the state low-income housing tax credit application, so it is very important for us to get this done now so that should you approve this today, they can submit this with their housing application. The low-income housing tax credit application is administered by the Arizona Department of Housing. Two applicants stated they were applying for those funds. One was Mesa Art Space Lofts, the second was Encore on McDonald. We did later get a request from the developer for Encore to withdraw their application. We did find that both applications were consistent with our consolidated plan. So I'd like to just give you a brief overview of the Mesa Art Space Lofts, what their application stated. It would be 50 live and work units for artists and veteran artists and their families. It would be located at 155 South Hibbert. It would serve households of 40 to 60% of the average median income. The rents would vary from $385 a month for a one-bedroom up to $830 a month for a three-bedroom, two-bath.
Excuse me, Liz. I think Mr. Yes. Luna has a question for you.
Thank you, Liz. When you say veteran artists, are you talking about veterans who are artists? Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay.
Who have
just
a veteran.
To clarify.
Yes. Who have served in our military.
Okay.
Artists that have been paying for it.
Yes.
Okay.
Good question. And their request for funding is at $500,000. The scoring took into account both the Housing and Community Development Advisory Board and staff evaluations. They did score 127.6 points out of a total of 135. So what I asking of you today is for your direction to provide conditional approval on funding of Mesa Arts Space Lofts for $500,000. Should you provide
just,
yes.
Just a question real quick. The $500,000 in this home pod is set aside for what in our consolidated plan that we approved, what, last year?
It was for the rental development.
For rental development. Do
yes.
we have other money set aside for home ownership?
We do.
So that money's still in place, but this is just for the rental half of it.
Yes, so they asked for the maximum amount that we had set aside for rental development.
In the consolidated plan?
Correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Should you provide this approval, we would provide a letter to the applicant. The letter of support would say that it's a conditional award upon their low-income housing tax credits. They would also have to comply with the federal requirements that are many, but they would those would be outlined. So the letter that we would provide to Arizona Department of Housing would state that the City Council has approved conditional award contingent upon their award of low-income housing tax credits and compliance with federal requirements. That is my presentation. Welcome any questions.
Thank you, Liz. We do have one speaker that is requested to share some views on this. Council, should we go ahead and proceed with that? And then do you have any questions right now you want to run by Liz? Okay. Thank you, Liz. I would invite Jen Duff to come forward. Jen submitted a card asking to speak. Thank you for being here, Jen. We're anxious to hear from you. You're good. You have 3 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
And this shouldn't take long, but I just wanted to appear here today on representation of the Rail Group, which is a community group, a neighborhood group that we formed in downtown Mesa, and it includes people outside of downtown Mesa, in support of the home funding for the Art Space project. I just wanted to state our support, reiterate it, and make sure that it gets the support that it needs. It's been community supported throughout the 3 years it's developed. ArtSpace has been in contact with the community and gone through all of the project and what it means to our community. We feel like it's going to be a catalyst for creating the density and involvement in downtown Mesa. We also want to state that it does fit into the meet the requirements of the Central Main Plan and the Arts District and the general plan in general. But I'm just here in support of that and wanted to state that case.
Thank you, Jen. Thanks for being here. Any other requests to speak on this item? Okay.
No request, Mayor.
Council, if there's any comments, yes, Mr. Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I would hope that we would continue our support for this project, which started really back in 2012. And our colleagues, present and past, have been engaged in this discussion really from day one and have had tremendous amount of input and suggestions. And I think many of us have been to art space projects throughout the country, and we see the beneficial effect, the catalytic effect, really, they have in the communities that they're in. And art space here was very deliberate in terms of surveying the community, understanding the community needs, and doing a lot of community outreach. I think this is a project, hopefully, that we will continue to give positive support to.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. Any other comments? If not, gentlemen, I would entertain a motion approving an award of $500,000 in home funds to Mesa Art Space Lofts, conditioned upon Art Space receiving fiscal year 16-17 Arizona low-income housing tax credits and meeting home requirements. Thank you, Mr. Luna. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and provide direction on a Main Street facade improvement pilot program. Jeff McVeigh, our Director of Downtown Transformation. Good to see you, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council. With me today is Jeff Robbins. He helped me put together this program. To give a little background, 6 years ago, the city went through the process of creating the Central Main Plan. One of the key goals for downtown, including that plan and projects, was the removal of colonnades. That desire in the community was reaffirmed as we went through the Downtown Vision Committee, which the council was presented last year and approved unanimously. To try and help achieve the goal of having some colonnade removal. There's always been that concern that if we remove the colonnade, then there's facades that have been neglected for 20 plus years behind that colonnade. And what can we do to help make sure that just removing the colonnade doesn't create a worse situation than we have now? So what we're presenting today is the outline of a facade improvement program. Purpose of the program is really to catalyze reinvestment in our downtown, to improve the public space and improve the quality of the building stock that we have. Often, facade improvements result in higher rents, higher retail sales, more foot traffic, and just a better sense of place. As part of this, we did a lot of research about other cities that have done facade improvement programs, and Jeff's going to talk about some of the research that we had.
So it was kind of my job to go into the data through other cities to take up qualitative research, to reach out some of our neighboring cities and cities around the nation and find out what they're doing and how they like their programs. And what we generally found was that the programs that exist have been around for a very long time. We'll talk a little bit more about Escondido and a few other cities, but there's programs that have lasted for decades. And in these programs, generally there's a 2-to-1 match or a 4-to-1, I should say 2-to-1 or 4-to-1 return on investment, public to private investment in these programs. And generally with everyone that I spoke with through the project managers in the city, they just spoke wonderful things about these programs and the type of catalyst effect that this is having in many of their neighborhoods.
You want to talk about?
Dayton. Dayton's a great example. This is a city where we had lots of different examples here that we brought up, where you can see the differences in the facades. But there's about $390,000 invested in the city. This is just about over 40 projects. And the private investment, the return on this, again, was about $3 million. So, again, quite much more put in by private investment than the public investment. And then Escondido, again, this is one of those cities that had a very old program. They've invested since 1989 just over $1 million. And in return on public or private investment, they've received over $10 million put back into these buildings. Knoxville, this is the chart that's in front of you. This is an example of some of the data that we found. And again, that we're showing a good award match. And on some of these projects, very, very large returns in public investment or private investment just from the public investment that was originally put into these buildings.
I don't expect the audience to be able to read this, but one of the very interesting things that you'll read in that chart, that there's a line on there. It's the project location is 106 Depot, and one of their metrics that they measured was the pre-facade improvement appraised value and the post-facade improvement appraised value. They had a property that was appraised at $84,000 pre-facade improvement, and post-facade improvement was appraised at $12.4 million. And 14,685% increase in. Now that's not going to be typical, of course, but that is an extreme example of what can happen with the facade improvement programs.
And going one other thing from some of the other places we looked at, Wisconsin, they had a qualitative data sampling. And what they mark again and again is that they were saying, because of this, we had two locations next door that also decided that they wanted to participate and they decided to change their facades. And many of the businesses said they measured increased foot traffic and increased business because of the improvements that they were making to their buildings.
And this wouldn't be Mesa's first foray into facade improvement. It would be the first foray into facade improvement on the Main Street side. There has been a project that was completed using State Farm Grant through NEDCO, administered by NEDCO to improve the rear facades of buildings as part of the light rail construction to help activate the rear of the building. They also saw a similar return on investment, the $15,000 grant. Resulted in significantly more investment in their property than the grant amount. In addition, there is significant benefit for historic preservation. Right now, there are 14 properties between Country Club and Mesa Drive that are eligible for historic designation, and there are many more properties that have historic value to them. all the studies show that historic preservation actually increases property values and does result in higher rents and higher appraised values for land. Right now, what we're looking at, though, since this is focused on colonnade and finding solutions for colonnade removal, we have identified a target area that is bounded by Center on the east, Ropeson on the west, and the two alleys, the North Alley and the South Alley, just north and south of Main Street. We do have some eligibility requirements, that this is buildings are constructed prior to 1980, that they have frontage on Main Street, they have colonnades, and that they're a commercial mixed-use building. Right now, that isn't an issue with the pilot target that we've created. All those buildings would qualify for facade improvement. There would be ineligible properties, not national franchises, not very large buildings in excess of 50,000 square feet. The city can't apply for its own grant program. Religious institutions, schools, would not be eligible either. This is a laundry list of what we would recommend be included as eligible activities under a facade improvement. But generally what this says is that if the project has improves the facade that's visible from the public right-of-way, improves the public realm, it's likely an eligible activity. Ineligible activities are those things that you can't see from the right-of-way. We're not going to provide a grant to improve the interior of the building or put on a new roof or put in new HVAC system or, you know, help you with your working capital. It's for those improvements that have an impact on the public realm. So getting into some of the details. Budget, that's always an important one. We're looking at a two-phase approach, the first phase being design of projects, so hopefully that we can have three projects that would be qualified under the pilot. The design would be $5,000 per project, and then the second phase would be the actual construction with up to a maximum grant amount of up to $25,000 per project, so that in total we would be requesting $90,000 to fund the grant program. We are going to explore alternative forms of funding through grants or partner agencies, but what we are trying to avoid is entering into federal grant dollars. It has been our experience, and we're trying to avoid the concern that it might be a disincentive to have federal dollars. The reporting requirements, the amount of paperwork that has to be completed by the property owners may dissuade them from actually entering the program. So as long as we can get dollars that have less strings attached, the more successful I think the program will be at the start. In addition to that $90,000 that's needed for the grant program side of it, there would also be the colonnade removal cost. Since the colonnade is completely on city property and is city owned, we have had estimates done that it'd be about $175 per linear foot to remove the colonnade. I think overall, if you were to take all the colonnades as they exist today, that's somewhere around $500,000. But that would be on a case-by-case basis. Under the program, the first phase of the design is a reimbursable grant of $5,000. Our thought is that the city would contact design professionals, create essentially an on-call list, much like engineering does with their design professionals, so that we can, if somebody is accepted into the program, we can give them the list of the design professionals that they can work with. The fee is already set, and we don't have to have any questions about the quality of the work. They can just take it there. That design work would include conceptual design, construction documents, and cost estimating. The information from that design would be used to create to inform the second phase, which is the actual construction side of it. That's a maximum $25,000 grant. That would require 25% match for each property. The exception to that is if they are a historically eligible property that are doing facade improvements that bring back that historic character, that we could waive the match requirement. With the construction cost estimates, we would require bids. Those bids would be submitted to whoever's administering the program. We would compare those bids to the construction cost estimates. If they're close enough, then we can accept the bids and they can proceed with work. And that work would start within 6 months and be completed within a year. And 25% of that grant would be held back until the project was accepted and moved forward. reimbursement of this could happen over as many as 5 reimbursable payments. It is not our expectation that we would have property owners have to front the entire cost of their facade improvement and then be paid back once it's completed. We would like them to proceed with the work as quickly as possible. However, we have reached out and we've been working with NEDCO. Should a facade improvement program or project exceed the $25,000 grant maximum that the city would include, they could receive a low interest loan from NEDCO for those amounts that exceed the $25,000 grant. Oh, this is an important part. We'd like to show that there is a public benefit to this. So one of the things that we would require is a 5-year facade easement on the property. So essentially that is saying that if you enter this program and we provide you a grant for 5 years, you have to keep that facade in the maintenance and in good repair that was approved and finalized when it was completed. And that is the quick summary of our program. We'd be happy to answer any questions. Our goal is to take direction from council, whether we move forward, if you have thoughts for changes or any thoughts at all.
Thank you. Mr. Kavanaugh.
Thank you. Throughout the years, I've been able to attend many conferences through the International Downtown Association and have seen programs like this across the country that where investments such as you're proposing really do provide a very good rate of return. And I think you've really constructed something that has a lot of safeguards in it, as well as incentives for it to be successful. Because I know we did see very positive results from the improvements to the backsides of the buildings during rail construction. It showed how it could be done, how it works, how those property owners benefit. So I'm hoping that we would move forward with a project like this.
Thank you, Mr. Luna.
So, Jeff, are you going to be accepting renderings? Is that what you want from the property owners? They submit some kind of rendering. Is there a committee that's going to make the decision, you know, whether that's going to be appropriate or not? And you're going to do this through NEDCO. Is that correct?
Mayor, Councilmember Luna, some of the details we're still working on. First, we wanted to get direction from council whether or not to move forward. Our thought is that as part of the design phase, that we would get renderings, conceptual design, and that the body that approval would go through would actually be our design review board, since they have architectural review authority for the city. NEDCO would be a partner agency with us should the facade improvement costs exceed the grant amount that they are eligible for. And Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, I should have mentioned it. There has been a demonstration project on Main Street in the past 10 years. Dixon's Jewelers is a bookstore. It's anecdotal evidence, but Dixon's Jewelers has said that after that colonnade was taken down and the facade was changed to awnings, that they had a 35% increase in sales year over year.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
I guess the only thing I'm trying to figure out is where's the money tree? You know, we've made some purchases in the last couple of months that are pretty significant. And, you know, we're leveraging quite a bit and really starting to dip into our general fund, I would think, to really start to fund some of these items. Are we positioned right now where we could take on more debt going forward?
I don't. This is not debt. This would come from operating cash, so we wouldn't be issuing any debt. Is that?
Well, I guess where's the dollars coming from?
Okay, that's a good question. So there's not debt involved. So what I think we'd do if council is interested in moving this along, enough interest, maybe what we could do is certainly bring it back as part of the discussion. We bring the budget forward to the council and put it in the context of the priorities of the entire city, if that's your like. But I think as we move further along and kind of we want to before we spend a lot, we'll make sure we're going in the right direction, at least with this program, get some feedback. And if the interest is to move forward, then we could make that part of a budget discussion.
Thank you. That's what I was guessing you were going to say is budget discussions are literally a couple of weeks away. And so this will be in the context of other things. Couple of quick questions. Currently, the city owns the colonnades, so I assume we're responsible for the repair and maintenance of the colonnades.
Mayor, I believe that is something that is included in the DMA contract. Nope. Never mind. I'm wrong. Yeah. We are responsible okay. for it.
That was a good try. Thank you. Let's vote. All in favor? David?
It's a good thing he showed up tonight.
Well, I know, for example, there's some, you know, code enforcement actions being contemplated on Main Street, and sometimes the pushback you get from the property owners is, well, why are you complaining about me? Look at your colonnade. It's rusty, and the chip paint's chipping, and, you know, I take out the beam from your eye before you talk about me. So that seems like another issue here is I would suspect there's some cost savings if we were to take down the colonnade as opposed to continue to repair and maintain it. With the replacement for the colonnade, would that be also going forward owned by the city, or would that then become the property of the owner?
Mayor, one of the key elements is that we don't know what the solution would be to the replacement of the colonnade. We all agree that the shade that the colonnade provides is a tremendous benefit to downtown and the pedestrians walking through downtown. But there are many solutions that could achieve a comparable amount of shade. It could be structural shade that's attached to the building. It could be enhanced landscaping. So any number of things. However, if it is a structural shade element, that would be attached to the building, and it would be the property owner's responsibility at that point. It would be an encroachment agreement with the city to have that encroach over our right-of-way, but no longer something that's owned by the city.
Great. Another question. I know you were saying the initial proposed expense would be $90,000, but if the amounts that were authorized would be up to $5,000 in design and then up to $25,000 in construction, that's a potentially $30,000 per project. Mm-hmm. That $90,000 is gone in
three
the
projects.
Space of three projects.
Mayor, we held an open house last week, we invited all the property owners that were within that project area that we defined to come in and let us present this program to them and engage their interest. We had about 25 attendees. We had a few property owners, I can't remember how many property owners we had sign up, actually say, fill out a form saying, yes, we're interested, we'd like to do this. There's only a few property owners, but they represented 15 properties.
There's three in total.
So they represented 15 properties, and they were very interested. One of them, I think one of the comments at the bottom was, approve this, let's get going. But
great. Well, I know this is agendized as to provide direction, but I think the council, please provide direction if you have some. But to me, it seems like we're talking about discussing this in the context of our budget hearings. Mr. Richardson.
Back when I was running the West Mesa CDC, we actually partnered with State Farm prior to NEDCO doing the facade improvement program, and Dennis will remember that. I hate playing the way back when card, but I remember when we started, it was very difficult to get the first person to do it, and part of the reason for that was our own internal bureaucracy put roadblocks in the way. You know, so we have some work to do likely with our signage down there and our sign permitting code. That's a big issue down there. The other thing that we'll want to consider in with this, a big thing that came up when we had kind of started this conversation is, you know, everything's kind of beige, and allowing other colors to be introduced into downtown, what a concept. The other is outdoor seating areas and shade appropriate for those outdoor seating areas. And, you know, we overcame that, I think, finally, you know, allowing people to put the outdoor seating areas on the other side of the sidewalks from their properties. And it's mostly, that placement was mostly driven by the location of the colonnade. So reworking that within the context of this might be in order as well, that pulling up the patio seating closer to the business and allowing people to walk, you know, closer to the street might be a consideration that we'll have to make. But, you know, I think my colleagues have brought up some really good points about oversight and design and what's going to be allowed. If you could add signage to that list, there's some, you know, signage that could be improved down there in the outdoor areas would be, I think, the other thing that I would flag on that. And process is going to be really, really important to make sure that we get buy-in, that the, you know, you have two dynamics. You have the property owner, then you have the business that often doesn't own the property. And so making sure that everybody's on the same page, because I don't want you to come back in here with conflicts between somebody who owns the property and somebody who leases the property saying, hey, they want to do this and they're going to affect my business. Mm-hmm. So just a few things to consider.
Thank you.
But yeah, generally supportive of this. It's, you know, when did we do that, Dennis? 2005, 2006, in there. So it's thrilling to see the city kind of
catching
join
up
us
to you
a decade later.
The only piece I'll add, I think it's great to have it in the this discussion in the context of the overall budget. Obviously, this has gotten, maybe because of timelines and things, to the front of the line. I don't know if I would put this, if we're in a tight budget cycle or some of the challenges that we've had, I don't know if this would be at the top of my list of things to accomplish, but maybe as we better understand where the budget's at and what's going on, you know, then look at some of this effort. So.
Okay, thank you. So I think the consensus is please let's put this on our agenda for discussion during the budget.
You can do that.
Thank you very much, Mayor. Jeff.
Thank you.
Council, if there's nothing else on that item, the next item is item 2C, which is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the request for proposals for the development of the southeast corner of First Avenue and McDonald. Jeff, looking forward to hearing this next presentation.
I've just got comfortable, Mayor.
Thank you.
On February 4th, we were asked to release an RFP for the site that was formerly going to home the Goldwater Library. After the memorandum of understanding with the Goldwater Library expired, that property became very developed. Their development interest became much more substantial. So the request was to put out a RFP to gauge the interest for development of that site. The RFP was generally for residential development with the ability to have some mixed use. We're here tonight because we'd like to get your direction and your feedback on the two responses that we received from that RFP. The RFP was released on February 4th and it closed on February 18th, so it was a two-week turnaround time, and we received two responses. The first of which was from Mesa Housing Associates II. As an overview of the site, or an overview of their proposal, it's a just under 2-acre site. They're proposing 95 residential units in an approximately 86,000 square foot building. They'd include approximately 425 construction jobs, 3 permanent jobs, with a total investment of about $18 million. They have identified letters of interest from financing, and it's important to note that we had a recent appraisal of land done last week. It was completed last week, and the appraisal came in at $510,000. Now, to get a little bit more into the details on this proposal, there's 2 separate components to this, separate but aligned, and would go forward at the same time. The first is Encore and McDonald, which is about 1.5 acres of that 2-acre site. It's 71 affordable senior housing units, 47 one-bedroom, 24 two-bedroom, a 5-story building, approximately 70,000 square feet, and a $15.5 million investment. The request is for the city to provide the land at no cost, and that this would be included as part of a low-income housing tax credit application that is due on March 1st of this year. The second element of their proposal is a half-acre, 24-unit, 3-story market-rate residential development with 20 one-bedroom units, 4 two-bedroom units, $2.8 million investment, with the request that this is included as a government property lease excise tax or GIPLET financing mechanism. There's details involved in that that we'd have to look into should this proposal move forward. The second proposal came from Cardinal Capital Management. Again, same site. Their proposal is for 120 residential units, approximately 167,000 square feet between 2 4-story buildings, estimating 335 construction jobs, 30 permanent jobs, and a $22.5 million total investment. They have provided a letter of interest from financing, and again, the appraised value of the land is about $510,000. A little bit more detail on their proposal. The residential units are all market rate. They're 61 bedroom, 48 two bedroom, and 12 three bedroom. They also include a little under 11,000 square feet of retail, first floor retail space along First Avenue. They are also asking for GPLET financing with a 15-year term, with the lease payments and purchase price that they are proposing, that would result in a total of a $468,000 compensation back to the city. So we are looking, after having reviewed these, we are looking for council direction. If there is a proposal you'd like us to enter into negotiations with, or if there's other direction.
Thank you, Jeff. Council?
I just lost the first question here. So we know Encore. We've seen them develop two phases. Don't know Cardinal Capital as much. What I understand, they do affordable housing as well. What examples of market rate housing has Cardinal Capital done in the Phoenix metro area?
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, I do not believe they have done any market rate residential in the Phoenix metro area. They have a project in Wisconsin called Pasadena. It just so happened that I was back in Wisconsin visiting home in October of last year, and I was able to make time to visit that development. I found it to be a high-quality development, nice finishes, nice architecture, and it was leasing up at a good rate and for pretty good rents as well. So I do believe, you know, if the question is whether they are a proven commodity on the market side, I do believe that they can perform as well. Not at all taking away from the Encore development, which is beautiful, and we love that building, and we'd love more of those. But I don't want it to be a consideration that the developer I'm sure the developer can perform based on what I've seen.
Well, it needs to be, because my concern here is you have the syndrome called, you know, one in the hand, two in the bush. Okay, so we have a known developer that has a proven track record of nice architecture, nice buildings. And yeah, it's a low-income housing tax credit project with a small market component, which is not quite what we wanted for the site, but it's better. And there's a good news story in this too that I'll mention in a second. But then I have another affordable developer who's been doing only affordable in the Valley. How do I know they're not just here to try to knock out this proposal and delay it, and then they're going to come and make a proposal, and then they're going to go, oh, well, yeah, we tried with all three of those financing places, and they all said, no, we're going to, you know, have to propose a low-income housing tax credit project on the site. You know, so that's my concern. The good news is, if I'm going to take this right at face value, is that we have a high quality. So one of the knocks that people have made on low income housing tax credit in downtown was that it would affect our ability to attract market rate projects to downtown, and apparently not, because we have now a proposal to go right next door to a low income housing tax credit project of good quality to have a market rate project right next door. So apparently that's not an issue. But my you understand what I'm saying? I'm just not completely convinced that Cardinal, who's only done affordable in this valley, and I think they've done some good projects and I visited with them. You know, I just worry that this is a play to get a site and to take away a site from a rival developer. And so I'm not completely convinced here. So.
And Mayor, Councilmember Richens, if I may, one thing I forgot to mention is that we did receive a third proposal. Unfortunately, it was submitted the day after the RFP closed.
Well, tell us about it.
That was also, it was a local market rate apartment developer called Art Haas Projects. They have several projects in the Phoenix metro area. Very urban, very contemporary, very modern type of development. I believe it was also 150 to 200 units. I didn't have a chance to look at the same detail as I had with these two. But it was, again, another request where it would have been GPLET financing. But it was another market rate project.
Thank you. Mr. Cavanaugh.
I'd like to dovetail with Councilmember Richens' comments. Cardinal does have a good reputation in building affordable housing. And the proposal that we're seeing here for the market rate housing is I think very interesting and very positive, and is evidence that, as you indicated, having affordable housing for seniors is not a turnoff for market rate housing to come next to it. I understand that Cardinal actually has other property in downtown Mesa that they own, and that's why I guess I'm a little surprised that I would have expected to see this proposal coming in on the property that they already own.
Isn't it
rather than
the
coming
street?
To ask? It's the old Cox. I think
right across property. The street from this site.
Right.
Sorry
to
interrupt.
That's where I would expect and welcome that project on the property that they already own. That's where I'm coming from there.
Thank you. Mr. McVeigh, you indicated that you received a third proposal, but it came in too late to be considered. My understanding is you also heard from other folks that expressed maybe some frustration that they wanted to bid, but they felt like the timing was the constraints were too difficult for them to prepare a good faith response. Is that true? Or
Mayor, we had feedback from several developers that they would have liked to have responded to the request for proposals, but a two-week turnaround time was not sufficient for them to actually put together what they felt would have been enough detail to feel comfortable with submitting.
Do you know whether or not those, or some or all of those folks that you talked to were going to propose market rate as opposed to tax credit project?
The majority of those were market rate developers.
Okay, council, any other comments, questions? Well, I tell you, I have toured Encore. It's a fabulous project. The company that built it is to be applauded. The city that worked with them is to be applauded. It's a great use. I welcome the affordable housing downtown, particularly the element of senior housing. It's a nice fit. So kudos to everyone on council and staff and the developers. I think I'm very proud to have Encore in Mesa. But for the last year and a half, I've had the experience of meeting frequently with real estate developers who come and say, hey, we'd love to do a low-income tax credit housing project on the light rail. And my response for the last year and a half has been, sorry, I'm not supporting those projects because we need some diversity in our housing stock. At some point, you know, maybe we can talk about additional tax credit housing projects, but I think right now I'd love to see anything but, just so that we create some diversity in the housing projects. So no knocks on Encore. Love it. Glad we have it. But I'm just a little concerned about doubling down and having literally nearly a square block of city property dedicated to nothing but 55-plus low-income housing, particularly when we know that we've got interest from apparently several folks to do a market-rate housing. That's the other thing I'm telling the people that I've talked with is, please bring me market-rate housing. So I would have a hard time. I'd have to eat all the words that I've shared with real estate developers over the last year if I were to reverse myself and embrace another tax credit housing project rather than the potential for a market rate project. So I think I have a feeling I might not be in the majority on this one, but those are my thoughts. Mr. Luna.
I actually like the Encore. I think it does have the diversity. And so my question is it looks like there's gonna be, as I read this, 24 market rate residential units. Is that exclusively for 55 and above, or so it's open? So we do have that diversity component that's already wrapped in there. Certainly Encore they've created a stellar building and a housing project in the downtown area. I certainly would advocate for this. And I also understand that there are also, there's an urgency to get this through because of the LIHTC, the tax credit. So I'm going to be supporting the Encore project.
Thank you for reminding me of that if the council direction is to move forward with the Encore proposal, we need that direction very soon so that we can be back here on Thursday with what is needed for them to make their right. LIHTC application.
Thank you. Mr. Finter.
My input would be, and we don't talk about this in public, but I'm going to throw it out there. One of the challenges that I've heard for downtown is nobody wants to be the first. And I've heard that from Mr. McVeigh, other people that I've talked to. And so for me, I would be very supportive of the market rate housing because it is the first. It's going to be the challenge. I kind of look at some of those numbers and go, I've got some questions. I think I'm going to be in the minority with the mayor. Definitely think the world of Charles and what's gone on Encore, and I was a big supporter in the Great Recession when he took a big chance to come in and do what he's done, and it's been very successful and top quality. So here you're implying that we have these other folks out there that market rate. We have a market rate proposal, even though there sounds like some why aren't they building it on this other piece? So I fully expect that I'll be in the minority, but I would suggest to you that now we've made it an either or, and we should never make these decisions either or. So if we truly have the interest that's going, we've been waiting for these kind of things to happen. If the decision is to go with Encore, I would suggest that we everybody get to hustling and figure out where we can put Cardinal. And since we are, I think, I don't know if this is still true, the largest landowner in downtown, we probably, there's 50 acres here or something there, and find an opportunity to make everybody a winner and nobody a loser in these kind of situations. So if you're asking me the either or, I would go with the market rate housing. But if I'm on the losing side of that, which I think I am, then somebody better be hustling and find out the place to put this other market rate housing. So,
Mayor, Councilmember Finter, today was not intended to be you have to choose between these two. There's always an option not to choose either project and re-release the RFP and and see what the market would bring. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. And maybe I that's where I would be. But Mr. Thompson.
Well, and I'm kind of right smack dab in the middle of both of those because, you know, I've never been a proponent of market-based or of I've always been a proponent of market-based housing and not affordable housing. But again, like Councilmember Richin says, there's a known quantity and a known quality that comes from the developer of Encore. But like Councilmember Finter, if we do go, and I don't necessarily want to go out for another RFP, but if I were to choose, I would say I would like to go with the Encore product developer, but I'm ready to stick a for sale sign on some more city property and let's get the market-based housing going.
Okay. I neglected there are two folks that have asked to speak on this, so if you don't mind, at this point I'm going to invite forward Mr. Mike Wright to speak on this item. Following Mike's comments, we'll hear from Fred Arnett. Mike, please step forward and have a seat.
Thank you, Mike Wright. I'm here on behalf of the Action Neighborhood Alliance, which is a group that has been formed recently. We have upwards of 450 members from the 85201 zip code area. We have studied and contemplated the issue of the distribution of low-income housing in Mesa. And we found that the West Mesa area has more than its share of low-income housing. And so we are generally opposed to new low-income housing projects coming into West Mesa. It seems to us that where you have market rate developers interested in the property, and even a proposal submitted, that there ought to be more time extended to study the matter. We're concerned about the short amount of turnaround time that the RFP was called for. Obviously, there are others interested, and so we would ask that you extend additional time for RFP bids or proposals. The impact on West Mesa of low-income housing is significant. We're concerned about crime. We're concerned about the burden on the schools. We're concerned about safety. And we think that there ought to be more low-income housing projects distributed throughout the city in larger areas. DJ Stapley has prepared a study on this, and I don't know if he has had a chance to share that with you or not. But it clearly shows that West Mesa has more than its share of low-income housing. The long-term effects of another project such as the Encore project would be detrimental in the long run. The Supreme Court last June issued its Texas housing versus, I think it's inversion communities decision. And it was followed by new HUD guidelines that require you to consider the impact with low-income housing concentrated in one part of the city. And so there is some risk that there may be a question raised as to whether the city is complying with that law. So we would ask you to defer ruling or a decision on this matter, allow additional bids to be taken, additional proposals, so that you have a good study and a good feel for the projects that are available. And if there are market rate projects available that would be of quality, we would certainly favor them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Next is Fred Arnett.
Thank you for having me. I'm actually here under two capacities. One is the constable for West Mesa. So I'm the constable for the West Mesa Justice Precinct, which is encompasses right here downtown, right here in Mesa. The boundaries are from Mesa Drive to the 101, southern to the Indian Reservation. So all day, every day, I spend the vast majority of my time evicting people from properties. And the West Mesa Justice Court has the most evictions than any other justice court in all of Maricopa County. I do 300 evictions a month versus North Mesa, my neighboring precinct, which does roughly around 100 a month. And then East Mesa, which does about 50 a month. So those are reports that I've had generated just to find out. I'm holding on to the evictions for the last 3 days that I do right here in this particular area. These are all people that are homeless, and a lot of these come from people that were removed from their houses because of a tax credit situation, Section 8, projects like La Mesita, things like that, which on the outside look like beautiful projects. But when you look inside and you do a ride-along with me, you'll find out what's really going on. And I would hope that you would consider that. I live here in West Mesa. I'm also a member of Action Neighborhood Alliance that we've put together because we're concerned. And I see it every day, and nobody has the glasses that I see, that I have to look through every day, is I see what's happening behind the housing. As I walk into these apartments and I see the drugs, I see the homeless, and I see the degenerate situations that I find people in. It's not Mesa to me. And so that's why I would ask, is there something that we can do better? That's all I would ask is that we, I also hold a real estate broker's license. And so there's something called fiduciary. We have a fiduciary obligation to our clients to present all offers. And I would hope that the city would operate under that same fiduciary, which would be presenting all offers or investigating all offers. I don't know why there's such a need to push this project through. It feels like it's being crammed through quickly. It truly might be the best project, but we don't know that yet. And that would be my only request, is that we proceed with caution.
Thank you, Fred.
That's Fred, a question.
Yes,
Fred,
Mr.
Fred, have a seat. Fred.
Oh.
Don't go yet. It's my good friend, Fred. These, mostly the group that's here, live in my district. I appreciate their energy and enthusiasm for the cause. It's there's been a core group that's been with me for the last seven and a half years that I've been on city council, and it's neat to see, albeit in the last year of my term, some new blood and new energy kind of rising towards being active in issues in Mesa. You mentioned La Mesita. In your capacity as constable, do you work with the owners and operators of the projects, so that's a specific one that you mentioned, but there's others that are market rate, I assume, that aren't low-income housing tax credit or Section 8 that you deal with evictions. How do you interact from a constable standpoint with those property owners, and how do we hold them accountable for some of the issues that are happening?
Well, that's a great question, and I'm certainly not going to claim that I'm the guy that you need to come to talk to find out how to handle that, but I just do know what I see. I do have a lot of suggestions that I will openly meet with owners if they ever want to meet. Sometimes they're owner-managed. Sometimes there's different personnel that do want to meet their constable and find out what they're seeing there. And sometimes we'll go to lunch or I'll meet them at their office. I met recently with Metro on Main, as well as the old Brittany, which is now the Market 87, is they're trying to improve those, just to give them ideas on what I think that they could do. I don't have all the answers on those, but I do know that the subsidies are certainly not helping. And when I will ask the manager, I always ask when I do these, I said, now, what scenario were these people evicted under? Sometimes it's just a standard eviction, but oftentimes it's because somebody didn't pay their $300 a month rent that they still couldn't make under a tax credit situation or a Section 8. So I don't have there's people that are a lot better in law enforcement to know exactly what they might recommend. But certainly we don't want additional density. We have roughly around 70% is, I'm going a little high there, it's closer to 65, 66% is all rental property. I mean, anywhere you drive in West Mesa, that's what you're going to deal with, is more apartment complexes. And so really what allows our communities to thrive are our actual communities, our neighborhoods. And so that's my question, is there something that we can put here that might draw people, whether it be single-family residences, whether it be some type of a business, something that might replace the library or whatever we were the Goldwater that was going to come in? Is there other options there? Let's look at all of them and see which ones might suit us best. I know that everybody here, that there's a large group here from Action Neighborhood Alliance. We're 500 strong, all live right here in West Mesa, and many are fourth generations, and our roots go deep. And so we really love Mesa. And whereas a lot of people have seen what's happened as it's declined over the years, they've headed out east, or they've headed to Gilbert. We don't want to do that. We want to stay right here. We're excited about Mesa. We feel like we have location, location, location. They're not making any more land out there. And so we've got one opportunity to really hit a home run. And you guys have already hit several home runs. I mean, we have some amazing things here that I am so proud of. And I didn't do anything to deserve those. These were your decisions that you guys made. And I would hope that we could just continue that effort. I don't want to just say, well, let's put some more low-income housing because we got a piece of real estate to sell. There might be something that's just phenomenal around the corner for us. That's all I would say.
Thanks, Fred. I was hoping maybe I think one of the things this group would benefit from is understanding the accountabilities around Section 8 or low-income housing, tax credit housing, and those that operate those in our community. So is there a possibility, Chris, that we could set up some kind of discussion with our housing folks with this group to help? Because, you know, when you evict somebody in Section 8, we're accountable for that because we help distribute those vouchers to people. We income qualify people. We also require the people who accept Section 8 vouchers they have to keep their property in a certain maintenance. You know, so there's a lot of accountabilities that we maybe have not had the manpower to be as engaged as we would want to be. And we might need to consider that as we go into the budget cycle in the future. But
okay. Thank you. We do have one more request to speak, and normally we take three cards. So Janice, and please help me with your last name, Janice. Is it?
Genevois.
Thank you, Janice.
Thank you. I just wanted to note, I'm a property owner here in the square mile in the Glenwood Wilbur Historic District. I've been here since 1995, and most of my neighbors have been here 20, 30 years. The homes pass from family member to family member, and we work very hard to keep our historic homes nice, and we're trying to raise our property values. When 155 Main Street came available for sale, I contacted Trader Joe's and asked them if they'd come set up down here on Main Street. We don't have a grocery store, and all of my neighbors who shop there. Well, Trader Joe's came back and said the reason that we can't substantiate a Trader Joe's on Main Street or in the square mall because the mean income is too low. When are you going to help us to raise our mean income? We live 0.7 miles from a $97.5 million art center. We live in walking distance to a light rail that can take you straight to the airport. This is a beautiful downtown. We have seven historic districts. It's time. Mesa has never been more poised for other kind of housing options. We want owners living in the houses. We want to build stability in the neighborhood. We want to get rid of the helicopters every night flying over our neighborhoods. We've worked so hard and we've held out so long. Please help us succeed. Please help us raise our mean income. Please protect our historic districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. Mr. Cavanaugh.
I think we need to focus on the specifics of the project. We've heard a lot of generalizations tonight. And this particular project, being the old guy, I guess I'm advocating for the seniors, although there are, I think, two other seniors sitting on either side of me. But the you know, this is not the classic project that a lot of residents in the action group don't like. This is a senior residential units, and I suspect that Mr. Arnett hasn't had too many eviction notices from Encore. It's possible, but not probable. And so these are affordable senior residential units that have proved a great benefit to seniors who still stay active or who are still working or getting to places because of locating along light rail. They're going to school at our universities down here. They're volunteering for our museums and arts center. And so that the affordable housing component of the one project we're talking about is seniors, 55 and older. And it's not a family situation where you're going to have any measurable impact on schools. It isn't going to happen. You're not going to have any measurable impact on criminal activity. And so I think we should take each project as they come, look at the merits, who is it serving? The beauty of this proposal also is, again, it is bringing in market rate housing, which is what we want in downtown. I like to see the blend of seniors living with market rate housing. I live in a planned community in Dobson Ranch that has the blend of housing, all different kinds of housing. I live in a 30-plus-year-old condominium project that was developed by Joe Shipley, who's on the West Mesa CDC board. And years ago, my Dobson Ranch neighbors across the street said that this project would decrease property values, increase traffic, adversely affect Washington School, and create criminal activity. Well, they got me, and I guess there's some people in the community that consider that a threat, but overall, it's been a good, quiet development. And yet, I think the council at that time focused on its priorities for that area and ensuring that there was a variety of housing available for people to live in a planned community. And I'd like to see a variety of people having access and living in downtown. So that's why, again, I think that the generalizations we're hearing, obviously there are concerns about particular apartment projects or places within the community, and I think we've got avenues that we need to address it. Believe me, Mr. Arnett, I know about my district and what goes on in the good and the bad and the ugly, and so do all my colleagues. So we don't have blinders on to what's happening. So I'm just hoping that we move forward tonight with one or the other. The thing about canceling the RFP, it's really unfair to the people who complied with the rules and provided the information. Their information is now all public. And, you know, from a competitor standpoint, I think you've got some issues of equity and fairness. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. Mr. Richens?
So we've been heading down this road with this project here for a long time. And I know my neighbors know. I've told them that I'm not opposed to Encore. I've told them that on Facebook. We've talked about it individually. I've always thought it was a good project. One of the reasons I've always supported it is because of the way it looks. I think it's a fabulous looking project. I think in 15 years, it'll likely turn to a market rate project, and then all bets are off at that point. I think it'll be a long-term benefit for downtown, but it also has a senior component. So one of the things I hear frequently from my neighbors is that they struggle with the impact on local schools, and it's true. Density is tough. You have to consider the impacts that you have on local schools. But I think that the issue here really is one of accountability of current property owners, and it's not low-income housing tax credit. I think we generalize all multifamily housing that takes a Section 8 voucher or is in a HUD program of some kind or is part of low-income housing tax credit, the formal program, and we lump it all together and say that's all low-income housing tax credit. I think we would have a very difficult time, or a very easy time, if you will, defending the placement of low-income housing tax credit projects in downtown Mesa. They are not overly dense, and it's not clustered. From certain perspectives, yeah, it could be, but when you look at the East or the Midwest or some of these other communities that have whole blocks, you know, this is a quarter of one block. Like I said to you guys a long time, I'm glad to see the new energy and the folks being involved here. I think it's fantastic. You've been involved about 30 days. These things have been going on for, and I understand some of the challenges have been going on for a long time. I also have a developer here that's been working with the community for a very long time. And I know this is, I'm going to get dirty looks at QT, and I know that, you know, you're going to hate me during Little League practice, but, you know, you have a developer who's come here and has a proven track record of a high-quality project in downtown Mesa, and Encore looks great. And I challenge any of you to go to Encore and look at it and meet any of its residents and tell me the negative impact it's had. Now, when it comes to future development, low-income housing taxpayer developments outside of this spot, I'm with you. And in fact, we've, you know, Councilmember Kavanaugh and I had a battle over one on Main Street a few years ago. The site's still vacant, but that was the right choice at that time. So you have to look at these in each of their individual contexts. This isn't, this isn't the clustering issue that's being claimed by some. It doesn't have the impacts on the schools and the crime rate that are being claimed by some here. So, you know, I'm going to support the Encore project, and over this, I'm not convinced that Cardinal Capital isn't doing anything but just trying to knock them out of the project. They have a site right across the street. If they wanted to build this project, they would have proposed it across the street. They've owned this site for several years. And so to the principals of Cardinal, and I think Julie's in the room representing them, bring that project to downtown Mesa. They have a site already that they can build it. Let's see them build it there. So that's just how I feel. And, you know, my neighbors, I've served in this spot for a long time, and my time is almost up, and it's somebody else's turn to make the tough decisions. But this is one that, I look you guys in the eye, and I appreciate your energy. I appreciate your enthusiasm. Don't lose it. Again, this is the first of many battles that you'll be fighting through the future. And I'll be right in the trenches alongside you. But this project on its own accord, this is the right place for that project. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think we need to move forward with a motion and see what happens. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, can I just, one of the things I need to get clarification on for you of direction. Those who may be supporting the Encore, I understand, make sure I'm making an assumption, sir. Here, clarify this for me. By itself, just the low-income housing, while that's part of it, you're also, it's important that we may make sure the commitment to deliver on the market rate components is significant. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
Because the developer will be under intense pressure to deliver the low income tax credit projects quickly. That'll be a requirement by the state. I just want to make sure it's clear so that, as you understand, when the city's negotiating the development agreement, we make sure there's performance on the market rate properties also, because I suspect that will come at some time in the future, but we need to have an ability to make sure that's delivered. This is what I'm making sure. I just want to confirm that is a direction from the council. Is that correct?
Yes, and actually I got some coaching from Mr. Smith on the appropriate wording for this motion if we do go forward with the Encore project, because okay. As you know, there's other issues because it's a mixed project with market rate and tax credit. The city, there are some legal challenges that would be present if we gifted the property to a non-tax credit proposal. So I think what the motion would be, according to Mr. Smith helping me write this, is there a motion to move forward with negotiations with regarding the Encore proposal? Because we still need to negotiate with the Encore folks to
We will be, in order for help, Mr. Humantle, which we've committed to, and we've actually, we're on a running start to this to help make sure that we can deliver the project in time to meet the application process. So there's negotiations, but I want to be clear to council, you're going to be making a decision within the week.
So we may be
within
back
7 days.
Morning.
Yeah. Or because I think March 1st is the deadline, I believe. So I don't think we want to cut it too much closer than that. So.
Sure. Okay, so if we move forward with Encore, it's likely we'll be back again on Thursday morning clarifying, given the negotiations that would take place between now and Thursday.
To approve the development agreement.
Right. Yeah, and Mayor and Council, if I could, that both proposals offered as a financing mechanism, the cheap light concept. But, in order to do that, there are certain notice requirements, findings, and things that obviously cannot happen before the end of this week or even within the month. And so we'd have to really sort of simplify the deal at some point in order to make it, to bring it back to you. We've already thought through some of this, regardless of which decision you went with today. and sort of drafted a generic form. And so will we be able to move forward with either of them on a very expedited basis? And so we've done that, but it's a much more simplified model and doesn't involve sort of the GIPLA concept. But we'll be able to bring you something back, assuming we're able to find a common ground here in the next 48 hours.
Right. And Mayor, obviously, this is moving very fast, so we haven't had a chance to talk. What I'm suggesting, though, is that if you whatever we grant on the low-income housing tax credits, that that has to be somehow coupled at some point with the performance of the market rate, because that will move out much faster. And I understand we'll probably need to spend some time coming back on the market rate, but I'm not sure the council would be satisfied if all we ended up with was the tax credit project and not see the market rate at some point in the reasonable future. I think that's what I'm making sure I want to hear from the council. So
okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think I know the way this is going down, but I need to just reiterate that I'm bothered by the sense of urgency here. I think it's somewhat manufactured to get a favorable outcome for this particular applicant. So I think we're rushing into something. And also the idea that the city of Mesa owns a ton of property downtown, I think is not entirely accurate. We don't own hardly any strategic properties. This is one of the few strategic properties that we have. This is a very attractive property. We don't have a lot of other street corners in downtown Mesa. Most of the property we own are in not particularly desirable locations for redevelopment. So those are my positions. But I would, and Mr. Richens, if you want, but please say whatever you have to say. And
well, I just dispelling the notion that this is happening on a very fast time frame. We've had this proposal from Mr. Humental for several months. This isn't new. The only thing that artificially squeezed this time frame was your decision to go out to RFP in a 2-week time frame.
Mm-hmm.
That was you.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, this wasn't that's the only reason we have this artificial mm-hmm. time frame. This was moving along with a developer that has been working on that block for some time, mm-hmm. bringing some nice looking housing into that area. So this hasn't been a rush job by any stretch of the imagination. So I kind of bristle at that notion.
Well, we'll agree to disagree on that. I think it was done very quickly, and it was done because I insisted, even though it was quick, I think it was quick is better than not going out to RFP and just gifting property to somebody without going through any kind of vetting process. That doesn't pass the smell test to me. So I'm grateful that we've gone through this process and we've thoroughly vetted it. I think it's been very transparent, and I think it was important that we go through the RFP process. So I wouldn't do it any differently. So, does someone want to make a motion?
Move to open negotiations with the developer.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded to move forward with negotiations with Encore. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Nay. So it passes 4-2. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is item 3, acknowledge of receipt of minutes of various boards and committees. Is there a second? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Next item is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, any discussion? Obviously, we are probably rushing upstairs, so we can come back to that on Thursday. Next item is scheduling of meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Mayor, I'm just going to announce them. Everything else I can talk about on Thursday morning, but our next study session will be Thursday, February 25th, at which time we'll be presenting to you some concepts for Mesa and University, the site that the city does own in the downtown area, about moving forward with an RFP for that. And we're presenting all market rate options opportunities, so maybe that'll help this discussion move over into Thursday, and as we look at putting another RFP out on the street shortly thereafter. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion to adjourn? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We'll reconvene upstairs.